I'm doing the show from London today, which means I've spent a lot of time underground.
This station is London Bridge. Change here for the Northern Line and National Rail Services.
London is famous for its tube. It's the oldest underground rail network in the world, but it's also very crowded. More than 5 million people use the tube every day. And at peak hours, up to 543 trains are zipping below one of the world's busiest cities. That's why Londoners were unhappy to learn earlier this year that the Crossrail project had been delayed. Crossrail is one of Europe's biggest infrastructure projects, a £15 billion moonshot that will cut down travel times across the city and bring relief to commuters. The project is held in such high esteem here that 2 years ago, Crossrail was renamed the Elizabeth Line in honor of the Queen. Claire Perry was a minister for the Department of Transport. She made the announcement before the House of Commons in 2016.
She has long been associated with many aspects of this nation's transport. Our Queen opened the Victoria Line service in 1969. The Fleet Line was renamed the Jubilee Line in honour of her first 25 years on the throne in 1979. And she is the first reigning monarch, Mr. Speaker, to travel on the London Underground.
The Queen will have to wait another year to ride the Elizabeth Line. It's now expected to open in the fall of 2019, which means Howard Smith is a man under pressure. When I met the director of operations at Crossrail's high-rise offices in London's Canary Wharf neighborhood, I asked him what the vision for the project was.
So the Elizabeth Line's about physically building some new tunnels, so about 14, 15 miles of new tunnels across the center of London, right through the heart of London. But those tunnels actually connect up the existing lines that run to the mainline termini in London. So for hundreds of years, well over 100 years, people in London, in fact in most European cities, have been used to coming to the edge of town in a big train above the surface and then doing something that's very odd when you think about it, which is to go on an escalator down and get in a small train to finish off the journey across the centre of London. And that's because over 100 years ago, you couldn't easily build tunnels because it was steam trains. They don't fit very well with tunnels. And also, there was a law that stopped railways coming into the very centre of London.
And it will go from where to where?
The Elizabeth Line in total will connect Heathrow Airport, the West End, the area just used for the Olympics at Stratford. So all of London's major areas all connected up on one new line.
So give us an example. Americans, if they've come to London before, they've probably flown into Heathrow Airport and they know that right now, if you were to get on the tube and come into London, it could take you almost an hour to get into the center of the city, 45 minutes to an hour, something like that. You can also take this fast Heathrow Express train that will get you to Paddington Station in about 20 minutes from Heathrow, but then you've got to get to your next destination. If you are taking Crossrail, the Elizabeth Line, how long is it going to take you to get from Heathrow Airport to the centre of London?
Just over half an hour. So to get from Heathrow to somewhere like
Canary
Wharf.
Let's say Piccadilly Circus even.
Piccadilly Circus, just over half an hour.
Wow.
So you come into Tottenham Court Road, that would be less than half an hour, one change from there. If you were coming to Canary Wharf, right over the other side of town, at the moment that would take you nearly an hour. That will take you about 40 minutes.
And how did you build these tunnels without disrupting the city? If you tried to do this in a U.S. city, people would be complaining that there would be traffic nightmares all over the place to build the tunnels.
Well, the tunnels that have been dug across London are fairly deep. They're not cut-and-cover tunnels where you go down from the surface. They're actually used tunnel boring machines. There were eight huge 100-metre-long factories underground tunnelling under London. So they're about 30, 40 metres below the ground. The reason they're able to get through and have a good alignment is because actually the route has been protected under planning regulations for decades. So the route was planned, and then the tunnel boring machines set off from the edge of town and essentially work towards each other.
How long did it take, though, to do that?
It took about 4 years to do the tunnelling.
Those tunnelling machines weighed 1,000 tons each and had very dignified names like Victoria, Phyllis, and Sophia. When they were finally done chewing up the clay below London in 2015, Prime Minister David Cameron went underground to mark the occasion.
This feat, boring 26 miles underneath the streets of London, it ranks alongside the Channel Tunnel, it ranks alongside the Great Western Railway Line. It's an engineering triumph, and everyone who's been involved should be hugely proud.
I asked Howard Smith how many things the machines ran into along the way.
In terms of tunnelling, incredibly very, very little in the way. And that's down to the planning that's been done over the years. So if you're building a big building, you're not allowed to do it on the route. If you're putting something in the ground, you have to take it back out. So there were a couple of incidents where tunnel boring machines actually came into contact with things that had been placed in the ground decades ago and weren't known about, or little parts of the route had sand or water. But tunnelling these days, the engineers are incredibly clever, and actually you can get around most of that.
But how, for all those many decades, were those routes able to be preserved and somebody didn't come along and say, oh, they're never going to build this thing. We can put this building right on top of this route. It'll be really great for us up here above ground.
Crossrail's been under planning, depending on how you want to call it, for over a century. The Regent's Canal Company actually had plans for an east-west railway across London back in the 19th century. Something called the Abercrombie Report at the end of the Second World War laid out London's future transport links and included something that we'd recognise as Crossrail today. So actually, the history of these things, even things like the Channel Tunnel, are that the good ideas don't go away.
What has been the biggest challenge of Crossrail?
Many challenges in Crossrail, and I've been on the project for about 15 years. Probably the first one was actually to get £15 billion together, jointly funded by the city and by government. Huge challenge. And then the real difficult bit, but I'm slightly biased as the operator at the end of it, is actually bringing all the pieces together. So something as complicated that connects up existing railways, brand new railways, new systems, old systems, that's the real challenge at the end of the job.
Now, we're here in November of 2018. This was supposed to open next month, right? So why the delay? Why is it not until next year?
The hardest part of the job is to bring all of it together. So old and new systems, the train, the signalling, there's three different sorts of signalling. So you have to bring those together and test them. And nobody wants to open something that isn't reliable. You would never open something that wasn't safe.
Right.
So we're continuing to test. We've got trains running up and down in the
tunnels.
Already,
they're in the tunnels.
At the time, the first train went through actually in June, from end to end in June this year. Mm-hmm. But continuing to test individual trains, then groups of trains, then bring the staff in, and then test passengers.
How do you test passengers? Do you hire actors?
We bring in passengers. A lot of our friends and relations, I suspect, when the time comes.
Friends and family.
Exactly. As was done many years ago, for instance, on the Channel Tunnel. And you bring them in, and if you want to practice getting them on and off trains, even a small number of them actually taking them off trains in tunnels. That's how you do it.
Now, you might hear this and think, why doesn't my city do something like Crossrail? The U.S. has never invested in passenger trains the way other developed countries have. Phase one of the Second Avenue subway in Manhattan took about 100 years to pull off. It cost $4.5 billion to build 2 miles of track and three stations. So what's the difference?
Lines like this, really big, high-capacity, expensive lines, only make sense in really big cities. Mm-hmm. So that narrows down the field a bit.
Right.
And the other challenge, which does apply in Europe, but perhaps not quite as much as it does in North America, is actually bringing the various funding streams together. In North America, you end up having to assemble a huge number of different funding streams that often take long time to bring together because they're dependent on different politicians.
And you didn't have to do that.
We had to do that for Crossrail, but we had to do that simply between the London mayor and the government.
The Elizabeth Line will end up taking a little more than a decade to build when it opens next fall. By all accounts, it will be a huge upgrade to an already impressive transportation system. But will it be good enough for Londoners?
Londoners, and I speak as a lifelong Londoner, will always find something that isn't quite to their liking in London's transport. I would say in the 30-odd years that I've worked on public transport in London, people's expectations have risen. But actually, I think people's understanding of the complexities has risen too, so there'll always be things that people don't like, but I think they'll love the Elizabeth Line when it opens.
We'll see. If you can't wait to ride it for yourself, you can find pictures of the Elizabeth Line at hereandnow.org.